welcome back to TYT. Anna, Mark Thompson, and Brett Ehrlich with you. Brett joins us. He was on the second hour with me yesterday, and it was awesome.
It was a really fun second hour.
It was.
Then I wore that sweater home. All the way to the house. Usually I take it off in the car and leave it there, which is why I always wear it. Mm-hmm. But I left it at home today. Then I got here and they asked me to join the second hour. So this is all I've got.
Wow. At least you got the hat today.
Yes. If otherwise, it would be really, really bad.
Well, I like that you're mixing and matching.
There
like,
you go.
The hat and the sweater, those are your two favorite articles of clothing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you decided to shake things up a little bit.
I'm going to be cold, but they tell you to stay cold in the studio.
I didn't realize so much thought went into your look. It's really...
He talks about his look more than I do.
I don't necessarily see that level of reflection in your look, but it's nice.
Right, yeah, you're right. It doesn't look like anyone put a single thought into it.
But that's the magic of it, that you put that much thought into that which doesn't look like any thought went into it. All right.
All right, guys. A few TYT lives for you. Captain Jinglepants says, why get rid of the war on drugs when this is how they bust people they don't like? Flip off a cop, suddenly you're a drug dealer.
Right, that's what you were saying.
I mean, I forget the name of the documentary. It came out several years ago, actually. The House I Live In, maybe? But it was about the war on drugs and why we outlawed specific drugs like opium and, you know, marijuana. It was to target certain demographics that we wanted to either deport or, you know, lock away. And so that's what the war on drugs is really about. I mean, it's been failing for so long, and why would lawmakers still support it? There's really no reason other than, you know, questionable reasons. All right, also Beth Haven says, release of OJ depresses me. Drumpf and OJ running free while youngsters are slave bound working for free. USA hit a new low, it seems. Well, I'm happy you brought the OJ Simpson story up because we are gonna talk about it. I feel like you have a lot to say on that story, Mark.
On OJ Simpson?
Yeah.
I think I have a couple of thoughts. Mm-hmm. One is that we have, of course, carried into this OJ parole thing everything from the murders that he was acquitted of, wrongly acquitted of. I mean, he clearly cut the heads off two people, right? And we all know that. And so now we want the parole board to do the business that a jury couldn't do.
Yeah.
Only they're not reviewing him for that reason.
You're saying too much.
I am.
All right, so let me set the story up for you guys in case you don't know the details. OJ Simpson was up for parole, and today was the day that he had his parole hearing. And so the news today is that he not only had his hearing, but the board has voted unanimously to grant him parole. And as a result, he could be released as early as the beginning of October of this year. Now, I want to show you video of his parole hearing and, you know, some of his, you know, justifications for what happened or what he did and how he reacted. But understand that he is not in prison right now because of the Nicole Kidman case.
Nicole Simpson.
Right. I'm sorry.
Nicole Brown Simpson.
Or the Nicole Kidman case. That is also a separate case.
Right. No. Nicole Kidman is not involved in this in any way, shape, or form. I apologize. I don't know why I have her on my mind.
Even though justice should have its eyes wide shut.
Right.
Anyway, so the reason why he's in prison is because he was convicted of armed robbery, and that happened in Las Vegas 8 years ago. All right, that's the context. Let's take a look at video from his parole hearing.
Mr. Simpson, before I cast my vote, I want to let you know that we believe that we're a fair board. We believe that we're a consistent board. I will let you know that consistency also goes to parole. And we do not look kindly upon parole violations. And if I cast my vote to grant and it concludes the hearing, our expectation would be that you not violate even the simplest condition of parole. Having said that, I am prepared to cast a vote. I am prepared to ask the commissioners to set conditions. If that happens, we will produce an order sometime in the next 15 to 20 minutes that will be faxed to you or presented to you at the institution, and it will become a public record. So based on all of that, Mr. Simpson, I do vote to grant parole when eligible. And that will conclude this hearing.
Thank you.
All right, so during the hearing, he also talked about the robbery itself, and he said that the two memorabilia dealers that he decided to target didn't, you know, they had stolen that merchandise or that material from him. It was rightfully his, and as a result, it was the reason why he decided to pull out a gun and threaten them and essentially rob them at gunpoint. But it's interesting because he had good behavior apparently behind bars, and so they had already cut down his sentence. But then, you know, since he was up for parole, he decided to move forward with this hearing, and they have unanimously decided to let him go.
The hearing went on for a while, and my favorite line from the hearing, there are two of them, but here's my favorite. O.J. Simpson said, "I believe in the jury system." Yeah, no effing you believe in the jury system. And the other was, he said, "No one has ever accused me of pulling a weapon of any kind on anyone."
No one has ever accused
really?
Him.
Except for those two people you hacked up that night with those knives. I mean, the truth is that, look, the one striking thing, I watched it, and you almost feel guilty for watching it because you feel like you're part of the circus. And I guess I was. I mean, I was drawn in a voyeuristic way. But he had a certain arrogance to him through the entire process. When talking about, for example, the effect of alcohol on his actions that night, and just in general, and his handling of, had he taken any courses while he was in, because they recommend certain courses.
Right.
And he hadn't taken the alcohol course. And he sort of said, "I don't really have a problem with alcohol." So, look, there's a lot going on here, but At the end of it all, it's just, you know, he probably served longer than he should have for that crime, and he didn't serve at all for the crime he should have served for.
Yeah, and so you can't ask this board to make a decision about a crime that they're not discussing. They're
right.
Specifically talking about this robbery.
And they
right?
explicitly mentioned that aspect of it during the hearing. They said,
yeah,
"We got a lot of letters from people on both sides saying that we both do take into consideration his previous accusations, both the criminal case where he was acquitted and the civil case with the Goldmans where he was forced to pay damages." But they said we could not take that in consideration. And that's where I find myself is, and a majority of Americans, literally according to USA Today, feel that he should be held responsible because a majority of Americans believe that he is guilty of the murders of Nicole Brown and Rob Goldman. And they think that he should go to jail more in Nevada because of that case. But that's just, you can't do that. What I found striking is of the four panelists that were making these decisions, one was wearing a football tie.
Really?
He is wearing a Kansas City Chiefs tie. Now, OJ played for the SC Trojans in college, and then he played for the Niners and the Bills. So he didn't play for the Chiefs, as far as I know. But just the idea, like, why would you decide to wear a football tie?
That's a really bad idea.
I just picture him looking through, like, Argyle, stripes, polka dots. But today's OJ day, I have the football tie. That is happening, and it's either a message like I'm with you football wise, or like I'm not with your team. It's
yeah.
just so weird to me. And there are moments during it where he, during the hearing, says, "I have not made an excuse the whole time."
But yeah,
but
he
all
made
the questions, the answers that you want to hear, that I think seem obvious to me as to what you would say, even if you don't mean it, is, "I should never have done that."
Mm-hmm.
And he did say along the way, "I wish it didn't happen. I take full responsibility." But then when the rubber really hits the road, is he supposed to demonstrate that he has the healthy approach to this that the criminal system seeks to, you know, the prison system seeks to make you rehabilitate toward? Is he just kind of says, "I wish Riccio never called me." He's not saying, "I wish I didn't go along." He's not saying, "I wish I didn't do this."
Mm-hmm.
It's, I wish that person didn't make me do it. And
I know.
It doesn't, it's that extra thing where like if you ask someone, do they feel remorse? They should say, listen, it was my fault. And he does say stuff like that, but then he gets emotionally charged.
He contradicts himself a lot, and that was what I noticed. And I watched it as well, but I didn't necessarily feel guilty about it. I just thought it was interesting to see, you know, whether or not his personality has changed from, you know, doing some hard time. And to be quite honest with you, it didn't seem like it. There was some joking going around. He talked about how if he were able to, you know, get released early, he'd go live in Florida because he doesn't think that they want him in Nevada.
Right, he made that joke.
He made that joke and everyone was like, haha, like they start laughing. And I'm like, this is kind of serious, guys. And you know, like, no, I get it.
I don't know how much hard time he's doing either, because
yeah,
if you talk to people in the joint, I mean, that's what we call it.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah,
the joint.
They will tell you that he is a rock star there. They take pictures with him, and the guards want autographs, and all of that stuff goes down. So I feel as though, look, it's not a party to be, you know, to have to coach the prison basketball team every day. But as prisons go, that's a better thing to have to do than, you know.
Yeah. I will say, though, I saw it in his eyes when they're waiting. She took her time, as you saw, to say, if I do cast my vote, talk. And just, and you saw him just, the 9 years are really on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And I don't,
and
of course he would want to not be in prison for 9 years. This is the system. Sure, I when I heard that he was out, I was like, okay. All right, he's out of prison.
Yeah.
He went in and tried to steal back stuff. And when they talk about the actual articles that were stolen.
Yeah.
He said that a California court had found that that was his property.
Yeah.
So he thinks, but the weird thing is how he processes it in his mind to this day. And I could see over 9 years, you would get more and more frustrated, not less and less frustrated, with the idea that nags in the back of his mind, like, yes, the people I was with did have guns to take this back, but we were stealing back my stuff.
Yeah, look, I get it,
so
but you still, you can't,
fine.
You can't brandish a weapon, you can't threaten someone with a weapon. Like there are, and I know he says he didn't, but there were guns involved.
Yeah,
whether he was carrying it or not, like there were guns involved. And so you can't do that, and that's the reason why they ended up finding him guilty. But I like that you brought that up, because that plays into the contradictions. This, I take personal responsibility, / but it was my stuff, so you know what I mean?
And I didn't have a gun, those other guys had a gun. I didn't call for them to have it. They told me to bring security that day. I didn't even want security. I don't have security to anything. It was the first time I ever had security. So yeah, it was the non-apology apology.
Exactly.
I just guess the question on all of our minds is how long until he's president?
Oh my God, please, I don't, how long before I slip my wrist? I don't
know. Oh, come on.
Well, here's the thing. Be for a technical reason.
I used to. Yeah.
What is the technical reason?
Yeah.
He's a felon.
Oh,
right?
That's right.
Oh, that's.
Will he be able to vote? He might not even be
I don't
able
know.
To vote.
I don't know. I know there's things like he can't associate with felons, and he's subject to random search whenever. They did outline a good number of restrictions on his freedom as a parolee. So I don't know. He's going to be in Florida. We'll see.
We'll see. All right, moving on to some other news.
If he's in Florida, though, if he's in Florida, he will just incidentally hang out with felons.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of it.
You know?
I know what you mean.
Just at
we have
Publix.
A story out of Florida later on in an hour or two. I really want to get to it.
Okay.
There are also good people in Florida. Hi, Florida.
My husband's
just
from Florida.
Kidding.
They just don't make news.
My fiance's from Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was joking.
All right. Earlier this week, news broke of a tragic police-related shooting involving an Australian woman who had called the cops to report a possible sexual assault in the alley behind her home. Now, unfortunately, when police arrived to the scene and she approached their car, the cop in the passenger side of that car shot and killed her. And the only thing that we know so far is that the police officer who was driving talked to investigators and said that they heard a noise that startled them, which is why he opened fire. Now, I give you that context because the commentary involving this story is different from the commentary that we typically see in police-related shootings or police-involved shootings. The cop in this case who opened fire is a Muslim. And all of a sudden, conservatives who are very pro-police are speaking out against this cop because he's Muslim. Case in point, Michelle Bachmann. She was at a gubernatorial event in Minnesota, and she gave a 45-minute rambling speech. And during these 45 minutes, she wanted to touch on the story involving this shooting. Here's what she had to say.
There is concerns in St. Cloud. St. Cloud now has about 16% Somali of the entire St. Cloud population. People were concerned in the St. Cloud area about how their area was changing. When Governor Dayton went to St. Cloud, his response was, if you don't like it, then you can leave. That's what he said to native-born Minnesotans. This isn't about being mean to Muslims. This isn't about being afraid of people with a different skin color. This is about Minnesotans who are saying the state is changing.
All right, so I'm setting this up for you guys. She kind of starts off by saying that, you know, there's an issue in Minnesota. More and more Somali Muslims are moving in, and people are really concerned about their safety and well-being. Then she gets to the cop shooting that I mentioned earlier. Take a look.
That's what I saw in Congress. That's what I see in Minnesota. Too many people who are being afraid of being called racist, bigots, Islamophobes. I'm not afraid of it. Because what we have to do is talk about the truth of the problems that are going on in Minnesota. Look at Saturday night. Look what happened Saturday night in this state. We had a man, Mohammed Noor, who was an affirmative action hire by the hijab-wearing mayor of Minneapolis, Betsy Hodges. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't know. All we know is that a beautiful 40-year-old Australian woman thought she heard a sexual assault ongoing in the alley behind her home at Washburn and 51st Street in Minneapolis. So she called 911. She was a brave woman. She called 911, and what we know from the news reports is that she ended up out in the alley. She was wearing her pajamas. So now just think of this. 911 got a phone call of a possible sexual assault. A woman comes up to the driver's side of a police car in her pajamas. You would think that the response of the police officers would be to protect the woman who was coming up to the side of the car. She had no gun. She had no weapon of any kind. Instead, Mohammed Moore, we know, unholstered himself, pulled out his gun, violating protocol, reached across the chest of his partner riding in the car and shot the woman through the window in her abdomen, killing her. I'm not condemning this police officer because I don't know. But I do know in that culture, the women are covered from head to toe. And a woman in her pajamas standing out in the alleyway, we don't know again why it happened. But what I'm wondering is this. Will the question that the BCA is conducting, will they ask cultural questions? What was the motivation? You see, in Minnesota, we have been marinated in political correctness so long, we dare not even allow ourselves to think about cultural questions. We're constantly condemned that we're guilty of white privilege, and we're supposed to go through shaming classes because of our background and our heritage for Western civilization. That's again where I say kudos to President Donald Trump. If you haven't listened to his speech in Warsaw, Poland, listen to his speech. He asked the right question. He said, will the West have the will to survive?
I can't with her.
What?
I like just.
Let the war begin.
There's just so much to comment on. First of all, I love how she's like, we really gotta ask these investigators, are they willing to ask, you know, the cultural questions? Okay, So is it all right for us to ask the cultural questions of white police officers who shoot and kill unarmed black individuals who are literally running away from them, not running toward them? Is it okay if we ask those cultural questions? Is it okay if we ask cultural questions about police officers who decide to shoot and kill 12-year-olds who are playing with toy guns within 2 seconds of arriving on the scene? No. We're not allowed to ask those questions. Those questions are uncalled for, right? But, it happens to be one time where a Muslim cop shoots and kills someone who, by the way, should not be a cop, who should be condemned, who should not be in that position at all because he obviously is not fit to be a cop, right? And he should be criticized. But instead of talking about, this is an ongoing trend among cops throughout the country where unarmed people are shot and killed because they're overly paranoid. They heard a noise, got startled, he opened fire immediately, right? That's the issue. It's not because she showed up in her pajamas. She's just literally pulling this out of her ass, right? She knows nothing. A lot of us know nothing. She didn't get shot and killed because she was wearing pajamas. She got shot and killed because we have a problem with training police in the country. It's something that we've been arguing about and talking about nonstop for several years now. But we can't ask cultural questions of white cops.
Well, she might also have been killed because this guy had a mental problem. She might also have been killed for a number of reasons. The priority should be, are we gonna find out what happened?
Right.
We do not need to drag it through this, he's a Muslim. Just listen to yourself.
It's literally the first time conservatives are criticizing cops, but they're not criticizing cops. They're criticizing one cop because he happens to be Muslim.
But when she throws in the hijab wearing mayor, that kind of, she puts almost too fine
from
a point
to
on it.
Head to hoe, from head to hoe, hashtag from head to hoe. Hashtag head to hoe. I don't even know what that means. I also can't take serious someone when in a sentence when they use the word pajamas.
There used to be a news outlet called Pajamas Media.
Really?
Yeah, they might
so
still
weird.
Exist.
Also, how could he see she was wearing pajamas if she was through a door
It was
and
11:30
a window,
at night.
And it was late at night.
Yes.
So that's the stuff. And then she says people who are afraid to be called racist.
I'm not afraid to be called racist. We know.
It's who cares what you're called? You're being super racist when you're saying
xenophobic.
An affirmative action hire by the hijab wearing mayor.
Yeah.
Because, and why? Because it reveals that when you see her, you see her hijab, the tone of voice you're using, the way you're using it, the obvious reasons you're using it is because when you take that, you make a bunch of assumptions about her that are all negative. Mm-hmm. And you're making generalizations in a negative light, that's racism.
And the thing that frustrates me about this whole situation is now you're setting a tone or setting people up to defend the cop, right? What the cop did was wrong. The cop murdered someone. The cop murdered an innocent, unarmed person, okay? Don't create a situation where people now have sympathy for what happened or for him. He should face consequences for what occurred. But she immediately, and it's funny because Cenk and I jokingly mentioned, people are probably gonna handle this story differently or comment on this story differently because it's a Muslim cop. But I didn't really think that was what was gonna happen. And it happened. It happened. I guess I'm incredibly naive.
Yeah.
No, it is weird. It seems so clear cut. But to bring the whole, to use it as a platform to bring in the race argument and that this religious integration of our community has to be looked at in some new way because you see what it's leading to. It's a wild pivot, man, and mm-hmm. She made it. It's crazy. The cops are too scared. They're driving around scared. And by the way, the media makes them even more scared, right? We elevate everything to the level of every stop is going to lead to violence, potentially. And they carry that with them, and it echoes in their mind. Anyway, on this point, it's a crazy pivot she made. Crazy.
Yeah.
She said it might have been a quote cultural seizure he had. Epilepsy? I don't know what medical condition cultural seizures are.
It's what happens when I see a Cuban dude.
You have a cultural seizure. And then this is a really great one where she says she talks about Trump and the vice presidents. She describes them as regular guys who don't mind being called racist. I just don't get that. She's trying to glom onto this, and this is they're regular guys because they say racist stuff. They're all that scene from Gran Torino. They're all kind of walking around being it's cool. And trying to use racist statements as making you a regular person. So they are trying to normalize racism.
They want to wear it as like a badge of honor. You know what I mean? And it's super interesting because she also talks about white privilege, and you can tell when that phrase is used, it really gets under her skin. Yeah. And so it's interesting to see how she can say like, oh, people are obsessed with political correctness, they get offended so easily, and then you just say white privilege and her head explodes.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know, I'm white. The phrase white privilege doesn't make me feel bad about myself, right? It makes me recognize an actual issue, and it doesn't take anything away from me. It doesn't mean that I haven't achieved anything on my own. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's just like this fundamental misunderstanding of what that phrase means. And it, anyway, drives you crazy. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, more news for you that you don't wanna miss, I promise, including, let's see. Oh, you guys printed out the sex robot story, but we're not doing that today.
Oh my God, that's the only reason I came in.
Is it cool if I take my mic off now and go home?
All right, just come back. Maybe we'll do the sex robot story. Maybe.
We'll have a real live sex robot in the studio tonight at 11.
We have a gentleman who goes by Woke Poppy watching the show. And Woke Poppy is indeed woke because his tweet is just, it's too good. It's too good. It's lit, as some would say. He says, OJ gave us the Kardashians, put that man back in jail for some crime against America, for that crime against America.
Does he get back end on the Kardashian show? No pun intended.
I don't know, but I did read about how he's not gonna be hurting for money because of his pensions and investments prior to being imprisoned.
Yeah, his pension was $25,000 a month, and it was just accruing while he was in the joint, which is what they call it.
Do they? Behind. Hang on, let me write that down.
Yeah, the prison. And so he's got, I think, $2.5 million in pension money waiting for him in one lump sum.
$25,000 a month?
No.
What do you do with all that money?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Because it's weird, because that's what I get paid here.
If I found out you got paid $25,000 a month, like, heads would roll. I would.
What? I thought we were friends.
No.
Wouldn't you be happy for me?
If anyone was making $25,000 a month here, heads would roll.
Yeah, like, I can't even fathom.
I'm sure someone is, and I don't want to find. Please don't tell me. Make sure I don't find out. That's when things get really bad. All right, member shout outs. Tamati Fitzpatrick and Charlie De La Cruz. Thank you so much for being members, guys. You help keep our show independent, and you are the backbone of TYT. So you deserve the shout out. You deserve much more, and we will have a post-game show today. Are you guys all staying?
Yeah.
Post game?
Sure.
Yeah. Can I? I don't know. First of all, that answer. Mm-hmm. Depends. Are we gonna talk about shoulders?
back to yesterday.
Just there was also with the tweet. Some people were saying, "Why is Michelle Bachmann relevant? Where did this come from?" Part of that whole long thing, I listened to other parts of it. She says she just got back from the White House because she still has meetings with Trump and Pence because she's an evangelical advisor to the president. So whatever that means, just means she has access still. So she has a level of relevancy. He's probably not listening to her because he doesn't give a shit about anything evangelical. Let's make sure we remember that. But she has access. Just to know, that crazy person is still going to the White House.
But she echoes every part of that very Bannon sounding agenda and messaging that he mentioned in Poland, for sure. Yeah. Ugh, that's who he needs as part of his voting bloc.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to what's happening in Texas. Lawmakers in Texas have been relentless in regard to dismantling reproductive rights in the state. And if you can recall, earlier this week, we covered a story involving the teen abortion rate in Texas and how it has actually increased because of some of the anti-reproductive rights policies that they've passed. Many clinics have shut down, and those clinics were providing contraceptives and family planning to young people and pretty much a lot of women throughout the state. And since they've been shut down, women don't have access. And so the unwanted pregnancy rate does go up. Well, lawmakers in Texas have decided that they will combat that by essentially making abortion illegal. So this new legislation that's been proposed would make providing an abortion illegal except in a small number of very specific circumstances. These include cases in which the abortion is necessary to prevent the death of the mother, or she is facing imminent severe irreversible brain damage or imminent severe irreversible paralysis. The same is true if the fetus is not likely to survive, has a serious abnormality. There could be exceptions made in those cases. However, if the pregnancy could lead to significant psychological harm to the mother, that would not be considered one of the exceptions. So what the lawmakers would do is essentially take a medical professional's license away if he or she performs an abortion in any case, unless it's under one of these very specific circumstances, okay? So notably, the bill explicitly states that performing an abortion due to any substantial risk to the psychological condition of the mother is prohibited. Also, keep in mind that the governor has been extremely counterproductive in the state. There was a bipartisan effort that was actually awesome that he decided to veto. The governor vetoed a bill that would have maintained Texas's Women's Health Advisory Committee, which had bipartisan support, and helped low-income women access reproductive care that would help prevent the need for abortion services.
That's the key. What Anna just said is the key. They are taking away reproductive education. They're taking away low-cost contraception. They're taking away the ways that prevent abortion before a woman is even pregnant. And then they are forcing, in essence, the pregnancy on a societal level to happen. And then they're forcing women now to have those babies. And more to the point, they're taking away a woman's right to choose. So you're taking away that reproductive education, and then you're taking away the control a woman has over her own body.
And also keep in mind that Texas has passed legislation that was considered unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. And I'm specifically talking about anti-reproductive rights legislation.
About abortion clinics and what they had to have.
Abortion clinics, exactly. Like the hospital admitting privileges, for instance.
Right.
The Supreme Court struck that down, said it was unconstitutional.
Right, because they wouldn't grant admitting privileges to anyone who performed an abortion. So it already you're making abortion illegal.
Exactly. But one thing to keep in mind is that lawmakers are now emboldened by the fact that Neil Gorsuch is a Supreme Court justice. And so if a case like this makes it all the way to the Supreme Court, which it likely would if it was passed as law in the state, there is some possibility that he would side with these lawmakers. And that's why a lot of people are really concerned about what's going on right now.
The loophole, some have written that the loophole is because Roe versus Wade allows certain situations in which states can limit the amount of abortion, albeit not in the first trimester. They're trying to find every little bit that they can, because as it stands now, the law's not on the side of these initiatives.
Right.
As proven by the Supreme Court case as recently as 2016, and just the legacy of Roe versus Wade. It's not on their side. So they're doing everything they can possible to get it at the edges, to undercut little elements of it every way that they can. And it just, I understand, I respect any initiative to change the world. They're trying to change the world, but the things that they're trying to change about the world are unchangeable. The facts remain that if you take away education about preventative, contraceptive education, if you get rid of that, it increases pregnancy rates.
Yeah.
And if you increase pregnancy rates, it increases the number of abortions.
That's right. That's literally what's happening in the state right now.
The main solve here, the thing that everyone agrees with you on, is people don't want to increase the number of abortions. We mentioned yesterday there was one quote where someone involved in a lawsuit said that these anti-lifers are so in love with abortion that no one's in love with abortion. Everyone wants to limit them as much as possible. No one wants to be involved in it. That's like the last case scenario. Worst case scenario, final option. But what they're doing is denying the fact that if you educate people, they'll know more. And that's all we need to do. Everyone wants to educate them, allow these practices. There's this new bill that they're trying to get through in Wisconsin that I read about, where they're trying to prevent state-funded universities from teaching their intern doctors abortion practices.
I can't.
Like how,
I can't.
Like about the procedure, just teaching them that the procedure exists. It's all these little tiny things they're trying to do when already not a dollar of federal funding goes to abortions.
Right. There's the Hyde Amendment, which prevents taxpayer money going toward abortions, unless it's a very, very, very rare circumstance. You know, the woman's been raped, or you know, her life is in jeopardy. Those are the very few instances where some taxpayer money can be used to cover some portion of an abortion. But one other thing I wanted to mention, because it's not just public money that they target; they're also targeting private money. So in this legislation that was just proposed in Texas, they're also trying to ban private insurance companies from covering abortion services in the state. Okay, just think about that for a second. So you pay your premiums for your health insurance, and they're getting in between you and your health insurance company and essentially telling you and telling those private insurers you can't cover abortion. Why? Why? You're really gonna tell them what they can and can't cover? Isn't it their business?
Yeah, this is the party that wants government out of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so inventive about the ways that they've tried to restrict abortion in the state of Texas and others, but Texas has really been their cutting edge. And as you say, they've talked about the clinics and certain restrictions on the clinic. They have to have hospital width hallways and all these things that would make it impossible for an abortion clinic. I mean, little stuff like that. You think, well, that's such a minuscule thing, but it prevents an abortion clinic from staying open. So
right.
With them closing, women in Texas are having to go farther and farther and farther to get it, to exercise that right. And as you say, it's a grim right that they're exercising. That's not an excited drive they're making to, you know, oh boy, let's go, you know. This is a very difficult and emotional procedure.
It is.
So it's the saddest news from a party that supposedly wants to stay out of our lives.
All right, moving on to other news. Martin Shkreli's trial continues. This is the notorious pharma bro who decided to increase the price of a drug from something affordable, around $13 a pill, to $750 a pill. And so that's how he got his claim to fame. But he is facing trial for something completely different. And in the middle of this trial, someone who has testified against him, his former hedge fund manager, shared a letter that Shkreli had mailed to him, addressed to his wife, and it shows you just how incredibly disgusting this guy really is. So in this letter, which again was addressed to the hedge fund manager's wife, Shkreli wrote, "I hope to see you and your four children homeless. I will do whatever I can to assure this. Your husband's arrogance is infuriating, and making an enemy out of me is a mistake." Okay, so threatening message, obviously, and just a disgusting message. Who gets excited at the thought of seeing children homeless?
He does.
I guess Martin Shkreli does. But just to give you some background on this case, he is being prosecuted because of his businesses. Prosecutors contend that Mr. Shkreli funneled shares of Retrofin to his hedge fund manager, that's Mr. Pirotti, and others, keeping the allotments just under the threshold for reporting requirements, and controlled huge parts of Retrofin through the scheme without reporting that to financial regulators. So what he did is he urged people around him to buy shares and then sell them and then buy them. So he was trying to manipulate the market. And in December of 2012, Mr. Shkreli arranged for Mr. Pirotti to be part of a group buying stakes in Retrofin, which was about to go public through a reverse merger into a shell company. Mr. Pirotti agreed to pay $400 for 400,000 shares, he testified. Now, why would Shkreli send him that threatening message? Well, at one point, Shkreli told him, "You need to sell me back the shares, sell me back the shares." And apparently he refused to do so. And eventually he just let go and he's like, "Fine, I'll sell back the shares." But I mean, you're manipulating, you know, you're manipulating things, you're doing something illegal, you're sending someone a threatening letter, and now that threatening letter is being used as evidence against him in this case.
Yeah, I saw one of the most aggravating videos you could watch. It was a Vice video where a Vice reporter goes and hangs out with Martin Shkreli and plays chess at his house. And it's just the most aggravating thing. And after watching it, you kind of understand that the personality of Martin Shkreli is such that he doesn't know how to get people to like him. He doesn't know how to do that.
I don't think he cares.
I think he absolutely cares more than anyone has ever cared about being liked.
Mm-hmm.
And he can figure out how to make a lot of money off the stock market, make a lot of money over price gouging, and get financial gain. But the one thing that he does not know how to do is make people like him, which is compounded in its terribleness by the fact that the other thing he knows how to do besides make money is to get people to hate him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to get the positive reinforcement. He only knows what to do to push people's buttons. And so every time an idea on how to do that reaches his brain, he goes right for it. Mm-hmm. He knows how to be the biggest douchebag in the universe.
So when you were watching the chess thing, what kind of thing struck you?
Okay, so he sits back and he goes, let's open a magnum bottle of 2005 Chateau Rouge.
I don't even know what that on, is.
I don't know what the whatever the chateau was. But
is
then he sits
beverage?
Down and he starts drinking it. Yeah, it's a bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And she makes a move and he goes, so do you do the strategic, do you do the Spanish defense very often? Is that what you typically do when you play chess? And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he goes, and then just he finds a way to be like, yeah, because okay, it's very obvious that I thought you were doing it, but it's just obvious you know so little about chess. You're not a good chess player. Just like instantly, little tiny things like that.
How did she react to that?
She's an idiot. She's a Vice reporter.
Oh, come on.
Come on. She like he goes off when they're walking down the street. She's like, he's like, I really like to gouge the prices. And he says something also like, that's Pfizer. They do unethical stuff when it comes to price gouging all the time. And instead of at least pointing out the insane irony in that very, like a Daily Show reporter would just be like, so do you know anyone else like that? Instead, she goes, it's really cold. Why are you wearing that jacket?
Really?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Wow, okay.
Well, you send a moron to deal with an asshole.
Well, look, other pharmaceutical companies certainly do participate in price gouging. But
right.
Martin Shkreli stood out because he got super greedy and went too far.
5,600% increase in Daraprim, which is fights toxoplasmosis in AIDS patients. And he's not on trial for that. Like he's not on trial. That was a good Vice article I read that was like, I think it was Vice. It was like, he's not on trial for that.
Yeah.
He's on trial for robbing from other folks that were also trying to gouge prices.
Yeah. That's right.
And so
because
I don't know.
You can rob people in need. You can exploit the powerless as much as you want, but you can't take advantage of the wealthy.
Yeah.
You don't
do that. It's so weird. He's just a ball of neuroses with hatred in his bones.
All right, let's go to the great state of Florida for a local news story that caught my attention. I think you guys might find it a little interesting as well. A 64-year-old man in Hialeah, Florida was upset that AT&T utility workers were parked in front of his driveway. He allegedly asked them to move, and when they didn't do so, he took matters into his own hands. Take a look at the video to see what I'm talking about.
684 Southeast 5th Place, Miami, Florida. There's a guy shooting out the tires. And he's shooting the engine on the trucks and everything. All right, no problem. Shooting with an actual gun, a revolver. With an actual gun, he's shooting out the tires. All right. Yeah, I'm not even nowhere near the guy. He's a Spanish guy.
Okay, so he is actually a former firefighter. And that's pretty much all we know about him. He did end up getting arrested. But his neighbors say that he's a good guy. I mean, he just sometimes gets a little upset.
Just don't park in his driveway. That's the big thing. I mean,
no one's parked in his driveway. These are just utility workers doing what utility workers do.
Well, they were blocking his driveway. I'm just saying.
Where are you gonna go, dude? Like, you're that upset that you're gonna start.
He might want to go somewhere.
All I'm saying is, if the car is in the way, shooting out the engine which makes it move is not your solution.
When your driveway is blocked,
that's a great point. Shooting the tires.
This thing needs to move, so I'll just stop it from physically being able to do those things.
Here's the thing.
I get it though.
He has trouble making his point. there's a place in between, you know, complaining and shooting. Maybe you can find that sweet spot.
And sanity ends here.
I'm so happy no one got hurt. I mean, usually stories like this end in the worst way possible. There was a worker, not inside the car, but I don't know what those things are called, those bucket things.
The bucket.
The cherry picker.
And then they like do the things that they do.
Nice.
With the utility line.
I mean, I love the guy calling it in. He's like, he's shooting the tires. And they're like, are you near him? He's like, no. But then he's just like across
the
street.
Yeah.
Here's what I do in that situation. Gone.
Yeah.
Gone. He has a gun. I'm gone.
I saw falling
yes,
down.
Yes, I call the police, but I call the police as I'm running away.
Yeah, think about the normalization. Bullets ricochet.
Yes.
Sure.
He's shooting at this truck that has metal bumpers.
Yeah, and that truck has a family. Why would you shoot it? It has a family.
Oh my God, this master is so good.
Triggered is great.
It is good. Who
Triggered
came up with that?
Triggered is so good.
Trigger.
John.
Okay. Well, not so great anymore.
Really?
No, I just, look, Florida is, you know, very
free.
Lenient and laxed when it comes to guns. Yeah. So that concerns me. I'm glad that the person who called the police remained calm. I'm glad he didn't get hurt. I'm glad no one else got hurt. And I'm also glad that this guy used to be a firefighter and not a cop. Because if you lose your temper that easily, and you know, open fire that easily, I mean, obviously cause for concern. But you know, he has been arrested and we'll see how it plays out.
Is that how he fought fires? Stop it, fire. Move,
you're
fire.
You're in my way. Go away.
He reloaded several times, by the way. He had to stop and reload. Mm-hmm. So
is it weird that I get part of it, though? Like, I get, like, they're blocking my driveway.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Dude. He's a senior citizen. He's irritated, probably taking a bunch of medicines for crap that we've never even heard of. And, you know, they're blocking his driveway. So he goes out and says,
really,
hey, don't block my driveway.
Listen.
And they go, hey, we're working on this. You know, we'll let you know when we're done. And he goes, okay, I'll let you know when I'm done. Bam, 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 bam. You know.
I would never do it. I don't think you would ever do it.
No.
But, like, it seems like it's not real. Like, it seems like a thing from like a TV show.
He's a retired firefighter.
And
he's
sick and retired.
Yeah, okay. He's retired, which means he should be enjoying life. Like, he's not in a rush to go anywhere. He's not
Who
rushed,
says he's
I
not
think,
enjoying? He's probably shooting, he's shooting cars out front of his house. I mean, that seems like a great time.
Like, maybe I'd have a little more empathy if he's, you know, he has like a super demanding job and he's running late and like life's hard, man. He's really struggling. And then there's utility workers blocking him and he can't get out and he's about to lose his job because he's gonna be late. I still wouldn't, you know, justify him shooting up the car, but I mean, at least I'd have a little tiny bit of empathy. You're 64 years old. Relax. Someone take his gun away. Relax.
Older gentlemen get caught in their ways. He's like, nobody's going to disrespect my house.
Right.
I'm just telling you, I don't agree either. I'm totally on your side,
Bella. But it's not his house. The car is parked on the street. The truck is parked on the street.
Blocking his driveway, Hannah.
It's
a man's
not in his front
home
yard.
Is his castle. No, but real fast, because my father's an older gentleman. This is a few years ago. He hated how there was a really short place to park in front of his house. And he said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to paint that curb red.
It's oh
like,
God.
Dad, that's illegal. Don't do that. Yeah. But he's like, I'm going to take it in my own hands because no one else will listen to me. So there's a stuck in your way. That's a level lower than just shooting out tires.
Oh, my. I want to talk about that in the post-game show. If you're a member, definitely check it out. TYTnetwork.com/join if you're not a member. I hope you guys enjoy it. And thank you so much for watching. Thank you to Mark Thompson for joining in. Same to Brett Ehrlich.
You guys need to see the post-game show tomorrow, the Friday post-game show.
Yes.
Because I was told with probably 5 minutes to spare that I needed to host it. And so we just pulled out literally anyone nearby.
It's
fantastic.
Sounds fun. All right, guys, thank you so much for watching, and we will see you tomorrow. One, two, three.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.